In a society that loves shorthand and acronyms, you can instantly communicate an identity in three characters, like CIA or JPR or OR7. We don't count the hyphen as a character, obviously. OR7 may be the world's most famous wolf. He is the wolf who wandered away from the family pack in northeastern Oregon in search of a mate. His journey, tracked by a GPS collar, took him to Oregon, west of the Cascades, into California, even briefly into Nevada. And since he was believed to be the only wild wolf in those areas, his prospects for finding a mate appeared slim. Then came the evidence of pups a few months ago, with new pictures and new data all the time. Several agencies and a lot of interested observers keep an eye on OR7's moves and want to continue doing so. John Stevenson is a wildlife biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. John, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Is OR7 the most studied wolf you've ever known about?
Yeah, I think he's the most famous wolf we've known about. That's what happens when you're the first wolf to go to California in almost 100 years, I guess.
It really is that long. I mean, and he was the first wolf west of the Cascades in many decades as well.
Right. Or at least the first one with a radio collar on that we could track. We knew of some other wolves that had dispersed to the Cascades a couple years ago, but we just got glimpses of them, sightings from the road and seeing their tracks, but with this radio collar, we can really follow OR7 all around. Although I heard you mention in your intro that he had entered Nevada. I don't think that's true. So it's kind of like a fish story. I think the legend keeps growing.
Oh, really? I thought he had got crossed into Nevada briefly.
No, okay. I don't believe so.
I stand corrected then. All right. But he did get into far eastern California, didn't he?
Yeah. And he was in northeastern California for almost a year, 2012.
Wow. That's an amazing. How many miles? I mean, does anybody actually keep a running total of how many miles this wolf has traveled?
I think somebody has. It's over 3,000, I think, if you track all the comings and goings back and forth. So, you know, it's only like 350 miles from northeast Oregon where he started. But he's, you know, it's amazing the distances that wolves can travel. They're meant to cover ground.
You mentioned the fact that there might have been other wolves, there were some other sightings and things like that, which is a good point to bring up because we make a lot of OR7 as the first official case, but the fact is that there probably have been other wolves that preceded him across the Cascades.
Right. Probably not very many, but, you know, what we call them dispersers. They're wolves that leave their natal pack and strike out on their own in search of their own territory, and wolves can cover large distances. And yeah, in 2009 there was a black animal that was seen near San Yan Pass, and I followed its tracks, and it wasn't radio collared, and we don't know whatever became of it, but it was definitely a wolf. So there's been a handful, but not very many.
Did the tracks look like wolf tracks?
Yes, they went for miles. It was in January, it was in the wintertime, and so I followed his tracks in the snow, and it was went up towards the South Sister and mountains there. It wasn't like it circled back to somebody's pickup truck or back to the house. It wasn't any dog. It was a wild animal.
Wow, you covered a few miles yourself then. It sounds like tracking him or her.
Yeah, following wolves is a good way to stay in shape.
So, John, what do you make of the ongoing public interest in and reaction to OR7 and his news?
Yeah, well, I just think it was made for a neat story. That, you know, the looking for love sort of deal, and going down into California, and really sparked interest down there. And you know, we kind of the story had kind of run its course, but then this spring found evidence that he'd found a mate, and then that kind of brought the story to life again.
Did even you guys who were the wildlife biologists tracking him all these years, did you think maybe the story had played out? I mean, because his radio collar was dying was part of the issue, right? The GPS collar?
Right. And we weren't planning to recollar him because he was just a single, you know, lone wolf. And we generally only are interested in tracking ones that are paired up and try to follow packs around. So we were going to let the radio die. But then now that he's paired up and has pups, that kind of changes the situation. I think the neatest part of the story for me is not that he's made it so, moved so far. Other wolves have done that, but the fact that that this female, you know, came all this way too, and that the two were able to find one another is kind of the amazing thing. It's there's not very many wolves in this area, and the fact that they were able to locate one another over the vast landscape is pretty cool.
And there is recent evidence that she also came from northeastern Oregon, is that right?
Yeah, she's related to some of the northeast Oregon wolves. It could be she's from there, or it could be from she could be from Idaho too, because the northeast Oregon wolves are also related to the wolves from Idaho. So one or the other, either northeast Oregon or Idaho.
John Stevenson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We're talking about OR7, recent activities, and the interest in getting OR7 back in to get a new collar on him. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. When we talk about the difficulty of OR7 and his mate finding each other, I mean, this is really sort of needle and haystack stuff. But people shouldn't really be surprised, I would think, at the amount of land that wolves can cover, because the fact is that the pack in Oregon exists because those wolves traveled from Idaho, right?
Right. Right. And, you know, they started out in the center of Idaho, and they've just kind of radiated out from there and across. It took a while for them to get across the Snake River there in that Hell's Canyon country, but now there's 7 packs in northeast Oregon, and it was, you know, the ones in northeast Oregon are all fairly close together in that part of the state, so the fact that this new pack has sprung up on the other end of the state is surprising, but not unprecedented.
And so, I mean, do we have a pretty good fix on how big OR7's family is?
Not really. We know there were 3 pups, but there may be more. I was actually out last night or yesterday afternoon and picked up OR7 signal, but wasn't able to get any visuals. So we're still trying to figure out if there's exactly how many pups there are. It's very densely wooded country where they're at, and it's not easy to get looks at them.
I know you don't want to be very specific about where, but it's somewhere in Jackson County, is that right?
Yeah, in the Rogue River National Forest. Yeah.
Okay, well, what we used to call the Rogue River National Forest, now it's the Rogue River Siskiyou. You could tell how old you and I are. We still think
yeah, that's right. That's
the
right.
Old forest names. The issue of OR7's elusiveness, I mean, you know, wolves are not animals that are going to want to be around people a whole lot, obviously, but between the remote cameras and the tracking stuff, have you or anybody else actually laid eyes on OR7? Have you seen him in person? I mean, obviously people had to do the collaring. Were you part of that effort originally?
No, that was the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife put the collar on him back in 2011. But no, I actually haven't gotten a visual on OR7 since he's been down here in this part of the state. I did see the pups and got 2 of the pups. That was that photo of the pups sticking out of the log.
Oh, that was you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good picture.
Got that photo. But it's hard to get looks at them. But hopefully we're going to be trying to recollar, either recollar OR7 or collar the female here this fall, and so hopefully we'll get a look then.
So what is wolf mating behavior like? I mean, are they going to tend to stick around each other now that they've mated, or will they potentially wander away from each other over time?
They usually do. The pairs usually stay together and stay in the same general area, so that's what we expect, and that's why we want to make sure we have a working collar. The one on OR7 is really starting to give out now. We don't get as much data as we were getting, and probably will die altogether soon. But since that pair will probably remain in that area for a while, we want to be able to keep track of them. The pups will stay for at least a year, but pups sometimes disperse off, just like OR7 did.
And at what point, I mean, basically, does one family make a pack? I mean, at this point, is this considered a pack by itself?
Right. The actual definition is if the pups survive into next year, then it'll officially be a pack. So it's essentially the beginnings of a pack right now. So.
Okay.
But yeah, it's generally a breeding pair, and related individuals is typically what makes up a pack.
All right. So again, you want to make sure that you get a collar on one of these. I mean, either OR7 or his mate, but not the pups.
Well, yeah, if we catch a pup first, we'll probably put a collar on it. That's also why we're waiting to this late in the year, is they'll be big enough at this point that if we do catch a pup, they can handle a collar. but we would probably then continue to trap to try to get one of the adults, so we have a caller there within one of the adults so we can track them over the years. You know, those callers last 3 years or so, so we maximize the amount of time we have information on that pack.
I know it's going to concern some people that you're talking about using a leg hold trap. Can you alleviate some of the concerns and just walk us through the process?
Right. It's a rubber jawed trap, so it has rubber on the jaws. It's actually we call a foothold trap. It grabs their foot and then holds it. But we check the traps the first thing every morning. Usually you capture them at night because that's when they're moving the most. And so we get out there first thing in the morning every morning to make sure if we do get a capture that they're in the trap for as little of time as possible. So it's a very safe technique and it works well.
Is there any telemetry to let you know when something's in the trap?
No, we just, you know, we check them every morning. You can actually put beacons on the traps, but usually we don't. We just get out there first thing in the morning and see if we have something.
So every day of the week somebody's going to be out there making sure that the trap is or is not occupied.
Right. Right. We want to. And, you know, so you can sometimes catch non-target species, coyotes or even bears sometimes. So we want to make sure that we get whatever gets caught out of the trap as soon as possible.
So if it's something you didn't want, like a bear, I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, you have to tranquilize it, of course, to get it out of the trap. I'm not going to try to get a bear out of a trap without it sedated. So, you know, we carry the drugs we need to tranquilize whatever sort of critter might find its way into the trap.
And you're not using a tranquilizer gun from a distance, I gather.
No, it's a pole, syringe pole, it's called. So you basically, one person diverts their attention and the other sneaks around the backside, and it's just a pole with an extended thing where you can plunge a syringe into him and get the tranquilizer working.
And how much time do you have once the tranquilizer? First of all, how long does it take for the tranquilizer to take effect? And then
it's usually pretty fast, and you know, 10 minutes or so, they're down. And usually they stay sedated for a half hour to 45 minutes, and kind of slowly wake up out of it, just like people do. They're kind of groggy at first, and then they fully wake up.
Have you been part of this process a bunch?
Quite a bit, yes.
Uh-huh. Were there ever some hiccups and complications in the whole process?
Oh, occasionally, but it's a pretty safe thing. The drugs that we use are very safe and are not sensitive to, you know, overdosing or anything like that. So it's all the techniques have been, you know, there's been a lot of capture and collaring work done over the years on wolves and other animals, and the techniques are pretty well developed now for, with, you know, a very, very low rate of injury or other problems.
I know it's a state collar, but just for the folks who might want to know, OR7, obviously, is the seventh collar out there. But weren't they up to OR23 or something?
Yeah, I think it's 25 or 26 now is what they're up to, yeah. Yeah.
All right. So when the wolf is busy waking up from its slumbers and has this new collar on, I mean, have you guys dropped completely out of sight by the time the wolf is awake and free of the trap, and the trap is gone for that matter, too?
Right. Yeah, then we pull the traps. Right. We stay on the periphery there so we can keep an eye on them, make sure they come out of it fine. So, but, yeah, we get out of its way and let it wake up and figure out what happened and wander off.
We're talking about OR7 and wolf management and the process of trying to recapture OR7, potentially to get a new collar on him, because the old one is dying. The wolf himself is fine, but the collar is just about at the end of its life. John Stevenson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And you can join us at 800-838-3760 with questions and comments. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We did have a drop-off question from somebody asking, is there ever a point at which you'll just let OR7 go collar-free, let him live freely?
Right. That's a good question. That is what we were planning to do, like I mentioned before, found out that he'd paired up and had pups. It may still work out that way. If we catch the female, we'll put a collar on her, and I don't think we'll continue to try to collar her. We don't need both adults collared. We just want to make sure we have one. So, right, I can understand that perspective of let them have a little space. Mm-hmm. But we do. It's important for us to be able to keep track of the movements of the pack, both just to see how they're doing, but also we may have in the future some problems with livestock depredations, and so we want to be able to know what they're doing.
Well, and that's a good point to get into here now, because obviously it seems like there are general feelings about wolves that are pretty strong on both ends, where you have people who just think it's wonderful and great that wildlife has rebounded, that we have a wild wolf in Western Oregon, and then you probably have a fair amount of people that just think it's awful and the worst thing that could possibly happen.
Right, that's true. There is a tendency for people to either love them or hate them. There's definitely a concern among livestock producers about how this will affect this area up on the national forest. There are grazing allotments up there, and we haven't had any problems so far, and hopefully that'll continue, but we could in the future, and we want to address that. We want to make sure we minimize the impact on folks that are making a living out there.
Since you do work for the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service, and of course Oregon Fish and Wildlife is in charge of the wolf tracking, monitoring, management program in the state of Oregon, how do you guys divide up the duties?
Yeah, we're working real closely together. They've been great to work with, and on this capture effort, we're going to be working side by side to do the recapture work, and at some point we'll delist them at the federal level, and then there won't be any need for federal involvement. But right now, it's a good partnership.
Is there a multiplier, John? I mean, when we're talking about trying to figure out how many wolves might be in an area, I don't know what you have at your disposal, you and State Fish and Wildlife, in terms of equipment to be able to figure out how many wolves might be in an area. If there's like one wolf with a collar around, in this case it's OR7, I mean, is it possible there would be 5 or 10 other wolves around the area, 2 or 3? I mean, do you have any idea what a multiplier might be, a particular formula, rule of thumb?
Well, it's tough, yeah. I mean, the ones that don't have collars on are tough to count. But we don't think there are very many others. We did actually get another trail cam photo that somebody sent in from near the Oregon-California border recently, and so there may be a couple others. But just the fact that OR7 was pretty clearly by himself up until early spring, or maybe it was late winter that this female showed up. I was following his tracks in the snow some this winter, just kind of looking to see if, the snow tracking's a good time to do it because you can see two sets of tracks in the snow if there are two animals, and he was by himself. So it took him, 3 years to find another wolf, so we don't think there's very many others in this area.
Not like he had a lot of choices, it sounds like.
Yeah. It was pretty slim pickings for a long time, but it worked out for him. So, but now with this pack down here, if they continue to have pups in future years, there'll be more wolves in this area to radiate out from here.
I guess what we need to understand then is it's not an anomaly that he set off from his pack. I mean, wolves are going to look for new territory away from the birth pack, so OR7 would likely not be a rare sort of thing. I mean, other wolves will probably cross the Cascades as well from the northeastern Oregon packs, right?
Right. It's just, he wandered so far away from areas where there is a wolf population that, we thought anyway, that his chances of actually finding his own territory and finding a mate to breed with was low. And, it was low. I think it was, it was a fascinating thing that they found each other as far away from the nearest pack as they did. If you look at the map of Oregon and where the other packs are, they're all clustered quite closely together in northeast Oregon. And there may be others that we have yet to discover, in between. But they were a long ways away from the rest of the wolf population. So it was it was interesting.
Well, you certainly learned quite a bit more about wolves by watching OR7 go out. What are one of the things that you might have learned about wolves that might be shocking to those of us who are not wildlife biologists about wolf behavior?
Oh, what impresses me the most is just how they move. I mean, you know, I'm out there in the field tracking them and hiking these trails, and you go 4 or 5 miles along a trail and up and down, up and over the mountain, down the other side. It's strenuous, whereas these guys are covering 10, 20 miles a day, easy. They follow trails and roads a little bit, but then they just, sometimes when I'm following his tracks in the snow, they just crash right through the brush, you know. I guess they're so low to the ground and so stocky that they just push right through and up and over the mountain and down the other side. just incredible the way they can get around in rugged country.
And there you are trying to crash through the brush behind him.
Yeah. There's no way I can keep up.
No. And so how old do we think OR7 is, and how long do wolves tend to live in the wild?
Yeah, he's about 5 now, I believe. And, yeah, he's getting up there. I think the average age is about 7 or so. They can live, similar to a dog, up to over 10. And in captivity, they often do. But in the wild, you know, it's tough making a living in the wild. And so they generally, it's kind of 6 to 8 years old is typically the lifespan.
All right, and is there anything to try to bait OR7 or his mate into the trap you've set to try to get a collar on him?
Oh, yeah, we put some attractant there. Sometimes it's just wolf urine, you know, to attract them with the smell of their own kind there, because they're territorial.
All right, the saga of OR7 continues. John Stevenson is a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, in addition to all the work done by the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Service. John, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me.
Take care.